Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide. No escape from reality. Open your eyes. Look up to the sky that is. I'm just a fool for your mercy. Cause I'm easy come, easy go. Little Lord, any way the wind blows, doesn't really matter.
Control. Is Donald in control? Is the media corps in control? Is it all going to crash? Did Scalia really die? Of a great person, the birth of another? Mother, these are the questions we will ask tonight. Hi, Don. I'm on Quaaludes.
Okay, because there's nothing better to do up in Duluth. Everybody else in the country is high as hell. I don't know why you can't be too.
Did you see the Bloodfest, better known as the GOP debate?
Of course. And a Bloodfest it was. That one brought out the worst in all of the candidates up there on stage, including Jeb Bush trying to be the arbiter and the moderator and the good guy and the you know, pretty much, you know, none.
There was only one victor in that whole thing. You know who it was? Ben
the
Carson.
Number one I was just going to say, Ben Carson was probably the best, the biggest victor in that particular one. You know, I think he's coming down off of his doctor-induced, you know, self-prescribed medicine that he's really getting into what's going on. So I think that we're going to have a moment, a couple of months, where Ben Carson is actually going to start making a difference, becoming a player again. Because the other three gentlemen, and I use those terms loosely because Donald Trump made himself look like an ass. But
he interrupted so many times. It was so he should get that book, Everything I Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten.
Okay.
And one of them includes washing your hands after you poop and not interrupting.
Right. Well, all I know is that was an ugly example of what our leaders should not be or should be or what they are. It was ugly. Ted Cruz, he sat up there and he could only go, well, he had his prepared speech the whole time. He said the same thing over again and over and over again.
Who?
You know,
Bush?
Ted Cruz. No, Cruz.
Yeah, he got a lot of shit from three different people about being called a liar. And did you see the exchange between Rubio and Cruz? When Rubio said, how would you know what's on Telemundo or whatever, one of those stations? He said, you don't even speak Spanish.
Rubio said that to Cruz?
Yes, and then Cruz threw something back at him in Spanish, which I would love to find that clip.
Oh, boy. Well, it's there somewhere. It's absolutely there.
The full transcript was on Time's website today.
Okay.
It was ghastly. And I can't believe Jeb Bush gave in to Trump every single time. He should have backed off and just ignored him.
Who?
Don't you think? I think Bush should have ignored Donald Trump's dig.
Bush can't, he's a big baby. He can't shy away from a fight. He's like, you're familiar with Back to the Future movie trilogy, where, you know, you can't, when you say, I dare you, I double dare you, George Bush can't get away from a fight like that. If somebody dares him to do something, he will go ahead and take that dare. He's that stupid or vulnerable and stupid.
Yeah, because I also thought John Kasich did pretty good. He tried to duck and cover.
Kasich.
Yeah.
No, John Kasich did very well. John Kasich is in all actuality probably the best, the most competent Republican nominee. He's got some very good business, even though his company's lost money and went bankrupt. He's got some very good business experience. He's got international business experience. He actually has some halfway decent plans that aren't so out of the right that they're wrong. And he said, in my opinion, probably I can't say best qualified, because you've got to have the numbers to win the election, and that's key. And that's the only reason that I might be leaning towards Hillary. You know, I'm going to be going to my caucus here in Nevada and next week with I'll be an undecided, and that's not very, very common for me to go anywhere.
How does that work when you're undecided? At one point, do you have to decide it? Because every state has different rules.
Well, you'll be overrun or superseded by the majority. You know, you can stay undecided after the caucus. You know, one of the main things about the caucus is that you have to participate in order to continue down the line to the state party caucus. And then you go through the state party caucus, and if you desire, you can go to the national caucus, depending on meeting the requirements and if it's overbooked, whatever the case may be. So these are things that we're talking about in a process that is either voting process, or which is the primaries, or a caucus process, which is more or less the old time way where everybody does, you know, stands on a soapbox and stomps for either candidate or candidate. But I'm more or less one of those people who is a leader in the community, and I very definitely, virtually all the definite idea, concept, decision. So for me to go into something especially as important as this election as an undecided is very unheard of, and people are going to be, they're already shocked. They're looking at me like, but I've already told everyone my situation where I think.
Well, you guys are one of the early states. The problem is that Hillary and Bernie, New Hampshire was already Bernie Sanders. You can't gauge Hillary's campaign. So it's hard to guess at this point.
I was just going to say, my problem is that Hillary's going to be in jail. Go ahead.
Well, you've been saying that for 6 months on our show.
And I said, have I stopped?
No, you've said it. guess what the chair of the RNC guy said yesterday?
What?
He said, you got a 74-year-old socialist and a candidate, a.k.a. Hillary, who's being investigated by four different federal agencies. And then he was trying to cover up how lousy his candidates did, pretty much. So he was just trying to dismiss Sanders and Clinton, even though their debates are much more elevated and intellectual. And they never fight amongst themselves, even though there's only two of them.
Right, well, that's why they don't fight amongst themselves. The fewer people that are the fewer people, the less machinery that has to be affected. You don't have the friction. So two people has a much lower probability of friction or derision than you are going to have with, say, five candidate race or nine, or how many do the Republicans have? 15. My goodness, you know, you're going to have a lot of friction and stress on those candidates and therefore on the electorate. But
by the way, before John calls in, I was going to play a quick clip of Judge Scalia. In real life, he's rather personal. He's not a even though his ideologies is inflexible, his personality is not. So could I play a quick clip?
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to go for it here.
And this is a clip of what?
Supreme Court justices who become this much of a lightning rod. I'm surprised at how many people really, really hate you. These are some things we've been told. He's evil. He's a Neanderthal. He's going to drag us back to 1789. They're threatened by what you represent and what you believe in.
These are people that don't understand what my interpretive philosophy is. I'm not saying no progress. I'm saying we should progress democratically.
You think there ought to be a right to abortion? No problem. The Constitution says nothing about it. Create it the way most rights are created in a democratic society. Pass a law. And that law, unlike a constitutional right to abortion created by a court, can compromise. It can see. Oh, I was going to say it can split the baby. I should not use it. The Constitution is not meant to facilitate change. It is meant to impede change, to make it difficult to change.
But his critics argue that originalism is a cover for what they see as Justice Scalia's real intention to turn back some court decisions of the 60s and 70s. You've been labeled a counter-revolutionary.
A counter-revolutionary.
The idea being...
Sounds exciting.
The critics say his aim is to undo Roe v. Wade and affirmative action and allow more religion in public life.
The public sense of you is that you make your decisions based on your social beliefs, so...
What?
That is the perception.
I'm a law and order guy. I mean, I confess I'm a social conservative, but it does not affect my views on cases.
I don't believe the last statement he said. He said that I'm a social conservative, but it doesn't affect my view on cases. There was a funny part in the video where he said that he wanted to jail a sandal walking flag burner, but he wouldn't because, according to the Constitution, it's constitutional to burn a flag. But basically, he also made a crack about Bush v. Gore, that no matter what route Al Gore would have taken, whether he chose to go through the Florida Supreme Court or the U.S., which he never had a choice in, that the votes of all the counties would have been counted and he still would have lost. And it was his choice to go through the courts and whatever, you know, I'm just saying that I do, in a theory in judicial law, people's subjective decision-making does play into their ultimate decisions. By the way, John's AWOL and he said he'd call in and I don't know what's going on.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, for the most part, when he said that the Constitution is made to impede change, I wonder if he means if he equates change with progress. So you know, I have a doubt that what he meant there was good, you know, or positive or progressive or whatever phrase you want to use. You know, that's
very
important.
Well, basically, he says he would like the Constitution to stand on its original document, but does that mean, as Marco Rubio said it's last night in the debate, it's not a living, breathing document? Well, if that's the case, are blacks still two-thirds of a man? I mean, there's a lot of things that...
No, stop. We're three-fifths of a man. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry. But I'm just saying, what if the 15th Amendment, the voter rights, never went through? Where would we be without those amendments? What if the 14th Amendment never went through? Article 2, number 14.
Well, the original 10 was all that was needed. Because essentially what it says is that anything that's not mentioned in the Constitution is up to the states. So all of that stuff is not mentioned in the Constitution, anything, you know, education, things like that. None of that is mentioned in the Constitution. That's why Article 10 is so important to a lot of cases, is that it does say anything not mentioned in the Constitution is up to the states. So that's where I think that Scalia said that the Constitution was made to impede change, because that's a very important phrase right there that he mentioned. You know, because that is the heart of the mission statement, if you will, of the Constitution. you know, to impede or not to impede progress. And I see a good, I see good reasons to impede, because that leads to conservatism and slow growth and things like that. But right now, if you were talking to Pat, you would have a much better discussion about some of the things about desire to change the Constitution, because she really thinks that it's an old rag that should be put into a museum, and we should
The reason Al Gore lost the election was because of Article 2, Part 14, where it said equal application under the law, and he only wanted four counties counted instead of all the Floridian counties, and that's how, why he lost, according to the constitutional argument. Now, I just want to read something. The 14th Amendment in 1868 granted U.S. states U.S. citizenship to former slaves and to all persons subject to U.S. jurisdiction. It also contained three new limits on state power. A state shall not violate a citizen's privileges on immunities, shall not deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, and must guarantee all persons equal protection under the law. So, like I said, the right of suffrage, the 19th Amendment for women. What?
No, go ahead. I was just.
I'm just saying women would not be able to vote if it was kept under Antonin Scalia's original.
Well, he did help
philosophy
in eliminating affirmative action, which is the biggest problem for race relations at this time that we have, that we no longer have the same teeth in our affirmative action bill that we had, ergo we don't have the opportunity to really have power, any kind of power in the hiring, in the employment sector.
Yeah, well, where do you want to go with this topic tonight? Should we focus on the big hullabaloo that was created in the RNC debate regarding Scalia,
okay,
or should we just talk about how terrible the candidates were?
No, well, I'm not, you know, there's a, probably the candidate, Scalia, even though we can't and I won't disclaim the fact that this is a huge opportunity for, and it's a big shift, and it will be, you know, I trend politics, and the doggone momentum is going to shift with the Scalia death and this fight for appointment. Mitch McConnell has already said that he is going to try to fight to make sure that this nomination doesn't come until after the election, in case the Republicans win. And he, back in the Reagan era, allowed Reagan to appoint Justice Kennedy back in '88 on a year that saw him as a lame duck, quote unquote, lame duck president. So, you know, Mitch McConnell has freely, openly, you know, as it.
I think it took a lot of nerve for them to even. None of those candidates on the stage, except for Ted Cruz, who's a constitutional lawyer, really even had the scope of weighing in on that issue, on whether they thought Obama should be privileged to make that decision on whether to fill that seat.
I don't know, because Obama can take that privilege. That's his privilege.
He can. It's his duty and his privilege.
Right. And that's the whole point. That's why this is such a big uproar, because Obama is simply going by tradition and the general text of the law, you know, and it just basically says that the Senate is there to, what is it, confer and suggest or something like that. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but for judicial appointments, it's pretty much up to the president. The Supreme Court has very little say And they're going to take the nomination to the Senate. So, you know, you're talking about there's a limited audience that Obama's going to have to satisfy.
Well, they can reject first and second choices.
They've only done it the last time in 80 years ago or something like that. But you know, an interesting thing that was brought to my attention today is that there's a possibility that Cory Booker is going to be a potential nominee. He has a PhD in law or something like that.
Democrats?
Cory Booker, New Jersey.
Yeah, I know who he is, but...
That's kind of a pissed-off situation. Why?
Because I want Hillary.
To be a Supreme Court justice? I'm talking about Supreme Court
justice. They were going to throw him in the presidential race.
No. The Obama can potentially and possibly... have a majority vote for Cory Booker. He has all the creds, and the sad thing about it for the Republicans is that he's young and he's black, and they're gonna piss them off. But you know, Cory Booker has all the experience that they're looking for, and if he's willing to give up his senatorship, you know, becoming a Supreme Court justice, of course, is probably the second most respected situation in America besides president. So we're talking about if Cory Booker can be appointed and accepted, this would be the start of something that possibly could be incredible, that we have four new, young, judges on the Supreme Court. They would last years. This would affect America for 20, 30, 40 years, possibly. And, of course, all of their decisions would affect America a lot longer than that. And those things, climate change, issues, women's rights issues, those would all start coming up and being solved instead of being put to the back burner by the people who are yelling all the time, and that's the Red Party. All they do is yell. They have nothing. They have less
than
nothing.
Cory Booker also was a Rhodes Scholar, and he operated low-income legal clinics in New Haven, and he was also a football standout.
Right.
He's kind of an American hero in a sense.
No, that's what I'm saying. Obama could conceivably nominate Cory Booker, it would be incredible. It would be absolutely incredible because if he was, just with his nomination, the context of the Supreme Court would change. The whole complexion would change. People don't understand what's going on. You're sitting there and you don't understand what could be going on. If we get a Supreme Court nominee from Obama, and then we get three more from either Hillary or Bernie, and I'm starting to swing towards Hillary just because of the stability's sake, but she is a corporate queen. She's a corporate diva. She sleeps in bed with all the people in Wall Street. So I'm afraid of that. But I don't see where Bernie has the firepower to increase or redistribute the budget to implement.
Bernie doesn't have any common ground with moderate or conservative Republicans. In order to make all colleges free, he would have to modify. I'm sure he has a good relationship with them, but his ideas are very far-fetched.
Right, they're far-fetched. And that's what I'm saying. The implementation, that's what Americans don't understand, and these corporate people don't really understand. In terms of sustainability, That word is very important. You cannot sustain the suctioning of our cities by big corporations all the time. You can't do that. The cities will suck up and they will, you know, implode. They'll atrophy. They won't be anything left but a shell of themselves. And that's what's happening with, you know, a lot of the electors, the candidates, is that they're burning themselves out. And so, you know, we've got a chance, the American people have a chance to have a say in this particular election. By hook or by crook, they can take to the streets. We can make demands. One of the things that's most important is we can write letters to the editor or write directly to your senators and congressmen. You know, tell them exactly how you feel. Get petitions. Send out a list of names of friends who agree with you to these politicians. Put pressure on them, especially the Republicans, because they have nothing. Zero. They're wallowing. They're eating shit. They're wallowing in shit and loving it. It's a little salt and pepper. That shit tastes good. Because they do not have one proposal for one issue out there. They have nothing except for abortion, where they say no abortion. And that's pretty easy.
Yeah, and by the way, Donald
budget.
Trump. He attacked Donald Trump on his long-term support of abortion and even second trimester abortions.
Right,
Donald did not. Yeah, he never failed to acknowledge that. But I'm kind of sick of the abortion card.
That's what they all sound like. Rah, 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 rah. And how did you think about the weather, Donald? Rah, 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 rah. Do you think, you know, is it really true that all the Mexicans should go back home? Rah, 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 rah. And that's
you know
Republican
what?
Debate.
His one-liners are somehow hooking certain people.
That's because they're mean and hateful, and people love that. People are immersed. The American people, at this time in history, are immersed in self-pity and complaint. You know, complaining all the time. They are built like that. Everything that they see on TV, is a drama. And it has to do with something bad happening and somebody complaining about it, and then whatever the results are, that's your movie. Every movie is built that way, where complaining or violence are the norm rather than the exception in the movies. And that's including PG and G, and it doesn't matter, X. You know, you get the best violence in your X-rated movie because all you...
All in.
Yeah, I just tried calling John. He told me 50 minutes before the show he'd be calling in. So I hope he didn't crumple up on his bicycle. Let's just hear a quick... I want to play something quick just to ramp up the show. Just a second. Here we go.
Anybody up on this stage. But when those 2 a.m. phone calls came... You operated on a foundation of all of that amazing medical work that you did, all of that learning. So if you were to be president, though, you wouldn't have the political foundation that hones those instincts when a phone call comes. So isn't that a liability?
No, it isn't. First of all, let me go back to your first question for me. It wasn't phrased as who gets to nominate Supreme Court appointees. Of course, that's the president. So I know that there's some left-wing media who would try to make hay on that. Secondly, thank you for including me in the debate. 2 questions already. This is great. Now, as far as those 2 a.m. phone calls are concerned, judgment is what is required. And the kinds of things that you come up with are sometimes very, very difficult and very unique. One of the things that I was known for is doing things that have not been done before. So no amount of experience really prepares you to do something that has never been done before. That's where judgment comes in. And that, I think, is a situation that we're in right now, a situation that we have never been in before with the kinds of threats that pose real danger to our nation, and it comes in very handy in those situations.
Governor Kasich, Russia is being credited. Russia is being credited with bombing U.S.-backed rebels on behalf of Assad in Aleppo in Syria. They've also moved into the Crimea, eastern Ukraine. You said you want to punch them in the nose. What does that mean? What are you
going
to do?
John, first of all, yes, first of all, look, we have to make it clear to Russia what we expect. We don't have to declare an enemy or rattle a sword or threaten, but we need to make it clear what we expect. Number one is we will arm the folks in Ukraine who are fighting for their freedom. They deserve it. There will be no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Secondly, an attack on NATO jumped up on any excuse of Russian-speaking people, either in the NATO countries or in Finland or Sweden, is going to be an attack on us. And look, I think we have an opportunity as America to put something really great together again. The Egyptians, the Saudis, the Jordanians, the Gulf states, they all know they're at risk. When we look into Europe, we look at France, we look at Germany and the migrants, we look at Belgium, we look at Britain. Everybody now is being threatened by radical Islam. We have an opportunity to lead. You know, the fact of the matter is the world is desperate for our leadership. Sometimes they may make a remark here or there that we don't like, but frankly the world needs us, and we have an opportunity now to assemble a coalition of the civilized people, those who respect civilization, the rights of women, the rights to protest, be able to reassert our leadership all across this globe again and make sure this century is going to be the best we've ever seen.
Governor.
Do you agree with that, that the world is hungry for our leadership?
Yes.
I don't necessarily agree that the world's seeking American leadership, but with the presentation of the other candidates, how could they even respect us?
Because they hate us so much that they respect us. It's like if you've ever been in prison or in jail, do you think that most of those inmates like a guard? Do you think that they'd like the prison warden? Do you think they'd like the dogs that are roaming with the guards and ready to yap at you at any false movement? You think that you like that, but yet you respect them because you know that they've brandished the power. That's how blacks and most minorities have survived this long. Because right now in America or around the world, whites have that supremacy, and we have to respect that, even though we know it's completely wrong and that the white man pretty much is the devil. But we respect the fact that he has that power. We have to. There's nowhere else. The only other thing is the elimination. And they're already, genocide with the foods that we eat and keeping us in toxic cities and making sure that we have no money for anything because they always take it in taxes or levies and fines. So, there are no leaders in the minority communities because all the men are incarcerated or dead. So the world is looking for the only person who's standing, and that's, again, the white man, and the white man from the United States. The white man from Russia is just barely above vomit. And the EU banding those countries together for a bank, a common central bank, was one of the dumbest things anybody could have done, but they did it back in 90. So, we've got to conform with the times, and slow growth, like Scalia said, may be one of the purposes for having the Constitution where it's impedes change.
I agree, but I kind of lost my train of thought because John texted in with a lame excuse. So
okay.
I'm going to have you carry the show. He said he had somebody popped up at his house at the last minute. So I'm going to call him. And can you carry the show for 4 or 5 minutes with your ideology? I'll be back in a minute. Okay?
All right. And sure, no problem.
Okay, go ahead and talk. I'll be okay. Right back.
All right, four or five minutes, that's pretty good. Well, you know, my take on a lot of this is that race is the number one reason for a lot of this downfall of the United States. The white flight has taken away a lot of the momentum cities had garnered after the 50s and 60s. With the labor union, labor movement going very strong and everyone having money, even with rates, interest rates up in the neighborhood of 3, 5, 8, 12, 15%, we were doing very well because there was a distribution of money. Now with the big corporations taking all the profits to offshore bank accounts, no longer have the opportunity to control our own destiny. I don't know how smart it is, but the banks around the world, luckily or unluckily, because right now it looks like it's turning into unluckily for them, they had a lot of our debt. So they own a lot of our money. They have no problem with this, with using our money when they have goods to sell, but when they, we're seeing now with oil and cars and other, all kinds of other luxury items, that they don't have the sustainability to continually sieve all of our money from the United States. They've got to turn around and do something new, and they don't have the capability to do it. The new stock market in China, they don't have the capability of doing it.
Who doesn't have the capability?
New supplies. None of these leaders, none of these other countries. It's like our BLM here, our federal government and forestry. We here in Nevada are refusing to reclaim our Nevadan land, state land, because it's too large, it's too big to fail. It's too much for us as a state to handle. And that's what's happening with a lot of the other corporations and governmental agencies. They're taking on too much responsibility. They're taking on too much of a burden of trying to be too big when they don't have the capability, the infrastructure, the personnel to take care of something. And that's what's happening with the world. China, us being on par now in oil supply and production with the rest of the world, you know, that's ridiculous. We've never heard of that before, and our oil prices are subsequently showing that. You know, we're as Americans.
Why is gas? Why is gas in Duluth, Minnesota, only $1.46?
Because the gas in Reno, Nevada, is $2.46. You know, that's a lie that they're telling you again about the production of
well, it's not a lie when it only costs $11 to fill up my tank.
Right. No, that's not a lie, but then you're going to have to factor in the fact that you're going to be paying a lot more in social services for all the people on unemployment who are let go in the oil or ancillary oil industries. You know, you're talking about the fact that there's always a yin and a yang. There's always a give and a take. And even though we're going to be used to oil prices probably down here for a little while, unless there's a catastrophic event, we're looking at the fact that we've got an oversupply here that is record-breaking. All of our suppliers are full. We're frantically down in Texas and Oklahoma trying to build new storage units, but we can't get it done in time. People are saving gas, these electric and hybrid cars. aren't doing so much. People are much more conscientious when it comes down to their energy use for their homes and businesses. And so, you know, we've got here in Nevada, again, made a national problem with our Nevada Energy, Warren Buffett company, telling the solar energy that they have to close, that they are going to be taxed to make up the difference between solar and electricity, which is, you know, ridiculous, because you're putting solar on there specifically to save money and save the planet and everything, and we're supposed to be the second fastest growing solar state in the country. The most ridiculous shit in the world is happening here, and nobody realizes
Let's look at it this way. What problems can we solve?
We can solve them if the white people get off their asses and let people develop clean energy projects, develop more efficient business tactics.
And the corporations
are
the ones stopping it.
Less regulation. That's because they benefit from more regulation. They benefit from less ecological pureness. You know, they are for the destruction, so that ultimately they can own everything. He who has the most toys wins. He who dies with the most toys wins. And that's, you know, the white man's, you know, one of the only people I've ever seen who
will systematically
say. That's what I'm saying about sustainability, and that's why I'm saying it's important for them, the white man, to understand that in the near future, there is a change, a browning of America. And the only way that we can get through this civilly is if he teaches us what he knows, his technical skills, his techniques, his secrets. You know, he's got to teach people, all people, but basically people of color, how to smoothly transition to the next phase of global life. You know, we've got to have our tutors, and our tutors are taking a lot of these secrets with them to the grave, and there is going to be no one who can continue their work. So the job, and it's getting to a point of no return. We're losing so many people so quickly with knowledge that has gotten us to this point, and we don't have enough people to back them up. You know, here in Nevada, again, you know, and I'm going to talk about Nevada. I talk about it because we are going to be a bellwether state. We're going to be probably one of the most important states in the next 10 to 15 years in the country, because we're going to represent subsections of everything. But anyway, and that's for the West Coast primarily. But, you know, we're looking at the fact that we're going to have very, very important election that will determine how strong the West is, or whatever the case may be. You know, Cory Booker was saying today, yesterday, because, you know, I brought in, my organization has brought in Bernie Sanders, and Cory Booker was the spokesperson for Hillary. But we had a workshop that was Real Solutions for Real People, and it was just about diversity. But we brought in Bernie Sanders and Cory Booker, and Cory Booker was talking about his Las Vegas ties. The grandmother and mother live there now, and assorted family members. And he loves it, and all that, yada, yada.
And you met Cory Booker?
Yeah, well, I mean, I just quickly met him. I could have met him more, but because we were in Vegas tomorrow. Like I said, I met Bernie Sanders.
Hillary
was in
Vegas this weekend.
We'll be seeing her tomorrow. They gave us a special invitation to come and see her. So Pat and I are
is she going to be in Reno?
Yeah. We'll see her tomorrow. You know, I told you, we've seen her it's quite a few times so far. We've seen
her. Tell her Jane Hoffman is a fan. from
All right,
Northern
I'll tell
Minnesota.
I
well,
will. But, you know, this is going to be an exceptional race. Everybody's going to be accessible, looking for ideas. And anyone who has any ideas or concepts or wants to make a difference in politics or in their communities, this is the time to do it. If you don't do it now, guaranteed it won't be done any time in the future, in the near future. Because what's happening right now is a cataclysm of democracy. We do not know what democracy is going to look like after November, after January. You know, it could be a democratic socialist. It could be a hardline Tea Party rightist. You know, it could be anything in between. And we have no idea, you know, Alec is still lurking in the background, all these Tea Party people with the Koch brothers. The Koch brothers haven't gone any fucking where. They're still there, and they're still ready to pound.
Let them drain all their money into worthless candidates.
No, but the money comes back. These worthless, what they're draining, half of if you own a bar and you go there every day with 30 of your friends, you know, and they bring their friends, and you drink at your bar, and you pay for your drinks. Isn't it worth paying for your drinks if you've got 30 people plus all their friends going to your bar every day and keeping you in a profit? That's what it's like. You know, you've got everybody and their mom who's right there with you all the time. And it's just this, you know, it's important. You go to your own bar.
Well, I want to talk.
The Koch brothers own, what I'm saying is the Koch brothers own the media. They own a lot of the
I don't believe that at all.
The Koch brothers own the paperworks. They own all kinds of
I agree with the newspaper
brains.
Part because there was a ring up
well,
here.
I'm saying. No. What I'm saying is that if I'm a Koch brother and I own a newspaper and I've got a candidate, I'm going to take my money, give it to the candidate, have the candidate put the money back into the newspaper, and then I derive my profit or profit minus the candidate's expenditure, and it comes right back to me. That's how that circle goes.
I'm only going to continue the show 7 more minutes. I'm having a conflict right now, but I want to talk about something.
You certainly are. Is it John?
I'm disappointed in him.
That's all right.
I want to stay on task, though. I can deal with him later.
Right.
So
right.
Mark Rubio, Trump, and Jeb Bush all addressed something about eminent domain. So let me just read
right.
a passage from Rubio's debate. Well, let me say, from protecting the people of Florida from eminent domain to bringing accountability to the VA, to the Girls Count Act, to sanctioning groups, I'm proud of my service in the U.S. Senate and therefore, before that, the Florida legislature. I will say, if politics becomes and the presidency becomes about electing people who have been Congress or in the Senate the longest, we should all rally around Joe Biden. He's been around 1,000 years. He's passed hundreds of bills. And I don't think any of us believe Joe Biden should be president of the U.S. That's kind of a lame statement. And let us dispel once and for all with this fiction that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing. Barack Obama is undertaking a systematic effort to change this country, to make America more like the rest of the world. I have no idea what that means either. That's why he passed Obamacare and the Stimulus Act and Dodd-Frank and the deal with Iran. It's a systematic effort to change America. When I'm president of the U.S., we are going to re-embrace all the things that made America the greatest nation in the world, and we are going to leave our children with what they deserve, the single greatest nation in the history of the world. Oh, brother. Okay, what does he mean
right.
by Barack Obama's trying to change things? making friends with Iran is pretty radical, but I know what he means about Obamacare, but what's the underlying message?
All right, first of all, remember everything is cyclical. What he means by that is that Obama's on the fast train to being king of the world, and let me explain. What's happening is that he's got an inside track to the UN commission spot, on the UN. What the UN is doing, and this is the reason he supports TPP so abhorrently, and some of the other trade agreements, is because he's going to be potentially one of the counselors on the UN. And TPP, the thing that I find so horrible about it is that it not only takes jobs and kills United States motivation, but it gives the power to the IMF bank and the policing to the UN security forces in the world. That's why some of these people who are enlisting in the military are against what's happening right now, because in the oath you don't have to swear allegiance to the United States, but that infers that the United States is no longer your sovereign leader, but the UN is. But anyway, when he takes that over, he's going to develop so much power in the UN that he will virtually be the executive, whatever they call the bigwig. And that way, if he's got the power of all these international bodies, the international legal councils and courts, he's got the IMF with the banking and the UN security forces for security, he can pretty much take over the world. And that's what he's grooming himself for, or others are grooming him for that. So that's ultimately going to be the goal within the next 15, 20 years of the Obama legacy, where he will be King Obama. But, you know, this is just something that's a natural progression, just like, you know, Cory Booker and three more Democrats will possibly, yes, Democrats are in the presidency, will be a largely liberal Supreme Court, and they'll have much more carte blanche on decision making than atrophying the country by keeping minorities so stressed and tense that they're ready to blow, and they have no opportunity to live life. You want to just live life. You want to be free and have fun and suck the bullshit. And that's what you want to do. Ideally, that's what it's all about. It's had, you know, spending time at a baseball game at Fenway Park, or going to Disneyland, or, you know, taking a cruise. You know, whatever it is, you want to enjoy life. You don't want to have the drama where you're crying every day and your pussy stinks because you haven't had a chance to take a bath in 5 days because you're homeless. You know, there's all kinds of things that you really don't want to do, that you're forced to do, but you don't have to do it because most people are living the dream. Most people are living the life that they want to live. So you can't take that away from them. So you just sit back, relax, and look at the show. You know, enjoy the ride and laugh when you can, and cry when you need to, and just say, fuck the bullshit, let's go. Let's just do life. That's what you ultimately, that's all you have, ultimately. It's not about me pleasing Jimmy or Jane or Sammy or John or anybody else. It's me pleasing me. It's me making sure that I enjoy my life without hurting anybody else. And when you come down to being mature, being mature means that you want to please other people as well as yourself. The feelings that you get for pleasing others, and this is the basis of religion, you know, is that you ultimately want to serve man. You want to serve other people. That's a part of the highest parts of the hierarchy of humanity.
Well, my only conclusion tonight is that within the framework of the presidency, there's only going to be some successes. And broad sweeping generalizations such as the one I just read by Marco Rubio and common phrases by Donald Trump are not going to be a quick fix for America. At least there were some candidates on stage Saturday night, like Jeb Bush, who gave Obama the right to appoint a justice. He said, "I'm an Article II guy," citing the executive branch section of the Constitution. "But that in return, the president should choose a consensus candidate." I think what he means by that is something someone everybody likes. I'm disappointed in general by the tailspin emoting that's been going on in the Republican Party, parallel with a stark contrast by the what I consider fairly rational debate between Hillary and Sanders. I think when we get more into the cycle of the general election after the both conventions and there's a nominee, I just hope it gets more sane and there's more rational leadership that will reflect what the world needs.
Go ahead. That's not going to happen. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, then why did you say that the world is looking? Why did you say the world's looking for leadership with the United States? I don't know if we're capable, based on our parallel extremes of dualistic politics.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. You can't. We can't lead the world, even though they're looking for us to do so. You know that, and it's reflected in the confidence in our dollar. You know, the dollar has been as strong as it's been in 35 years. Why? This is the most ridiculous. You know, we're getting back to the point where we're going to be in another recession very shortly. We don't have the backstop to cover it this time. We don't have China to back us up. We don't have. You know, the only thing we have is the fact that we have our bank reserves are in as good a shape as any in the world. That's what's keeping the confidence level. And confidence is the only reason we have a dollar anymore. Without the gold standard, it's our good looks and our good smell and our good attitude that keeps us, that keeps the dollar afloat. If it wasn't for that, when the confidence leaves, the global confidence leaves, our dollar is going to be for shit. And there's nothing that's going to be able to back it up.
Well, right now, the dollar is one of the strongest currency.
That's
China,
what I'm saying.
China's market crashed about a week ago.
It's crashed for a while. It's been crashed for a while.
Europe is still in an austerity crisis on some levels. And
I mentioned the Glasgow directive. You might want to look at that again. GLAZIEV directive, where they tried to implement it and it failed for the first time they tried it, where they've got a new central bank making up of the BRICS, and they have $16 trillion to play with. And we only had 17, so they tried to get in the market, but we were able to sabotage it because we had the strongest currency. And China, borrowed from us to build these big cities that nobody lives in. They've got about 15 big, huge cities, New York-size area.
Who does?
China. And nobody lives in them. They just built and built and built. That's the reason they're going downhill, because they built these cities and all their money went into the real estate and purchase and development, and they've got no tax base to cover it. They've got to cover it, and so the money that they were taking from us now goes back into their banking system, and when their banking system contracts, like it's doing right now, it's got nothing. You know, they've
got
nothing
like
there. a communist. They're a communist trying to be a capitalist country. That's ridiculous. That's like a social democrat, a democratic socialist. Like Bernie said, that's a diametrically opposed phrase, and that's what scares me.
Well, that's what scares you about Bernie?
That's the big one. You can't be a democratic socialist. It's impossible. You've got to be more or less one or the other.
You can in Europe.
No, there's no such thing.
There's even parties in Europe, in England and France, there's parties called the Christian Socialist Party, the Christian Democrat Party.
You can be a Christian and whatever. You can be that. You can't be a democratic socialist. A Democrat is someone with one vote, one person, one vote. In socialism, one vote is one vote. Everybody's vote is one vote. And that's not right. You know, you don't have the same kind of checks and balances within the executive branch and on down the line. It's just not the system. Socialism doesn't work that way. So
we've already tackled, America's already had to readjust their sales for everyone to get different kind of installed health care. And if Bernie thinks he's going to sweep through the country and eliminate student loan, he made a comment, something like, the government makes $19.2 million a year on student loan interest, which is actually you can claim on your taxes, I found out, because I did it
right.
This year, but... The fact of the matter is
you can't include it in bankruptcy.
So why can't the American government take the $19.2 million they make from student loan debt and on interest rates and apply that to the national debt?
Why don't? Because they're too busy. First of all, lining their pockets. Do you realize, you don't realize how much waste is actually going on? Probably 30 to 40 cents per dollar is stolen, put into some pockets, and people have to buy yachts and pay their club, you know, country club memberships. But, you know, and you see where the VA hospital today are charging $15, $20, $25 executives with embezzlement. They've been stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years. But anyway, and that's the VA hospital.
I know the whole story. I used to work for the United States military in North Chicago. I saw all the duplication of paperwork and things that seemed like they could have trimmed here and there, and they didn't.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we're talking about the infamous $700 hammers, you know, so that's your military. That's where your money's going, and your money's going a lot more than that. Most of your military is bringing over all the drugs and sex trafficking and everything else. It doesn't come by way of you know, Johnny Sergievsky out of Corvallis, Oregon. This is freaking the Army, Navy, and the military, and everybody's like, oh, we love the military. Oh, yeah, well, okay, if you love drugs and guns and your, you know, sons and daughters being killed by weapons made from their own country, then we're fine with it, you know. But that, again, that's the devil's take. He's going to get those people who are evil, and he's coming to get us right now. You know, there are a couple of people that I've spoken with, clergy, who are saying that this feels like it is the start of the apocalypse. You know, and in a way, I almost can feel what they're saying. My problem is that I'm too busy in the middle of the fight every day to make sure that my grandkids, my kids and my grandkids, and hopefully their have a halfway decent life So, you know, that's something that I don't have a chance to really reflect on what's going on and what could be coming down the pike 40 or 50 years from now. I'm studying 10 years because usually I'm about 10, 20 years ahead of everybody else. But you've got to look that far down in order to make sure that you, what you're doing now, what you're making now, what you're creating now, will have sustainability and sustenance in life in some form or another in the future. And that's the most important thing about living in the individual living in the here and now. If you live in the here and now, you're actually always cognizant of the fact that whatever you're doing is going to have some kind of positive effect or becoming an effective or efficient medium, to use as a tool. That's your whole objective in life. So what you do now, you know, has to play on the future. So we're thinking about all that.
Well, I'm going to sign off now. My basic conclusion is I don't think they should have any more debates. I think I don't mind the Anderson Cooper format where he talks to each candidate one-on-one, but I really don't think the debates, at least on the Republican end, are that effective. Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, they've covered all the bases. We know where they stand on issues. Like you said, with the RNC, except for a few hazy areas, you know, where we have some affirmative idea where they stand and where they're going to lead us, especially on ISIS. A lot of them are militant. Other than that, all six of them working together in a public format is very destructive. And I'm personally embarrassed to be an American based on what I've seen in their behaviors.
Very good point.
So, what's your final thought?
I have said quite a bit in this program. I don't know, I know all of it was cognizant, but if it came out a little bit skewed in terms of its delivery, it's because I was just talking from the heart, pretty much. I hope that it all comes down to the fact that we just need to make sure that we take care of ourselves so that we can take care of others. You know, that's the only reason we're here, main reason we're here. And it's a God justifying way that we can live, you know, in his sight. So, that, you know, we need to make sure that we do the right thing and make an attempt at a peaceful transition for the future, or else it can be very, very chaotic and ugly. It could be a civil war very easily.
I agree with the idea of civil war, and if I lived anywhere in South Carolina, I might be tempted to throw a tantrum if I saw Donald Trump on another stage.
That's all right. He's going to be on a lot more. He's the best... He's probably the best marketer, I would almost say, the world has ever seen in its history.
Bull
and,
crap. Madonna's better than him.
Well, I said one of the best. You know, I mean, Madonna made her fortune in singing, film, and fashion. Donald Trump made his the hard way. It was given to him. And, you know, when daddy gives him $1 million, you can do a lot of stuff if you're young and motivated and aspiring. You can do a lot of things with $1 million to start a business and start a company. He's done it. So you've got to give him credit. And I do. But I don't think, that's the only reason why I disagree with you about the debates. I agree with you about the debates in general. They should stop them. They're they're just a circus that's demeaning the intelligent Americans, you know, minds. It's just demeaning to their character, slap in the face kind of thing. But it does bring out the character flaws. We saw Marco Rubio two debates ago become a robot, you know, a Stepford wife. And then we saw last night Donald Trump was the biggest sissy, pussy baby I have ever seen on TV as a candidate. The guy was like, well, Ted did it, and then Marco said it, and then Ted's a liar, and all of you guys, I'm going to take my, you know, ball and go home.
Who said that, Trump?
That was Donald Trump. You didn't recognize him?
You want to know what pissed me off also on a broader scale? Marco Rubio insulted my two favorite presidents, Obama and Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, he did Carter.
I got payback on Twitter. I defended Obama and Carter. I got one retweet and four favorites, and I got 4,000 hits since Saturday night on my top 12 tweets from the debate. But I want to mention one more thing before we hang up, since we're on a roll. I was watching The 70s, which is a CNN special, and terrorism didn't start on September 11th, 2001. A group called the Weather
Underground.
The Weather Underground blew up a condo in New York right next to Dustin Hoffman's house, a political activist group, and killed three people back in the day.
Yeah, but they were partially responsible for the Washington dormitory bombing. I'm not Washington, Madison, Wisconsin. You know, the Madison building.
Yeah, the science
right,
building.
Right, and also one in, Bill Ayers, who was now in the Obama kitchen cabinet. Bill Ayers, as he wanted to have an ambassadorship that he asked for a year ago. You know, but he was one of the masterminds. He was indicted. He and Bernadette Dorn, those guys are all heroes now. You got Patty Hearst. These are all people who are heroes. You know, they didn't do a whole fuck of a lot, but they sure got their name in the paper. And, this is something that terrorism has been around forever since, who knows.
Yeah,
so,
well, I know because of the Munich killings at the Olympic, and, of course, all the Palestinian and Israelis and the
Cain.
Irish.
I'm talking about Cain and Abel.
Irish and British.
I'm gonna make
a final comment. Blank you, John Yoder, for not showing up. I'll be like Donald Trump. I didn't say the F word. I didn't say it. I just said you.
Yeah, well, he has to have. He's been celibate for a long time. It's Valentine's Day. Maybe he is. ... So, you got to give him a break until you finally find out what's going on.
He hasn't had a love life in 15 years, and all of a sudden he has a surprise Valentine's date. That needs to be approved by Jane Hoffman.
And Jane Hoffman is a mean old witch who's having a bad day.
Well, you had a bad day, and you did. I don't care what that holy roller does in his free time, but at least text us and say, we can't make it to the show. Hello, I can't make it to the show. Hello.
Well, he didn't do it, so you're going to have to get over it, darling.
I already sent him three texts and one scathing email.
All
he's
right.
not getting his He's not getting his last $22 back that I owe him. I'm saving it for the next BTR payment.
Okay, then tell him that, and he's going to understand. He'll understand.
And Jihad Jane might be coming through the West area in March, so I'll let you know when.
All right, sweetie.
Okay?
No problem. Okay.
Okay, I'll let you go. The show's over. We've been on the air 1 hour and 20 minutes, and I just roasted John like John Rickles. And I have nothing left to say.
No, you haven't roasted him like Don Rickles, and you do have 8 more minutes. You can really roast him because, you know, you're the only one who knows what's going on here. I have no idea why he didn't call him, and at least say
he told
he wasn't
me
working.
Why. He had a last-minute Valentine's date.
Well, then there you go. I don't understand why you should be happy for the gentleman. You know, I mean, I don't even know if he can get it up anymore. So
he's my most loyal friend.
Why are you dissing him like that?
You'll find out. Here we go. He's my reserve piece.
Oh, I got you.
Okay, let me tell you a crazy story before we hang up. I've been friends with a guy for over 10 years named Travis, and he's teaching in China. And he comes over to the U.S. 2 to 3 times a year on his breaks. So all of a sudden Friday night, I get an email from him on Facebook. Could you meet me in Minneapolis, you know, if I set up a time and stuff? And this is Friday night, right? I said, okay, yeah, I can meet you in Minneapolis, but I need at least 48 hours warning because I live 2.5 hours north of there. Well, then he said, how about Sunday? I said, no, I'm working a split shift. My son has to go to a Dungeons and Dragons party, and I have to give him a ride there and back. And then for one thing, I realized I'm a 55-year-old who's not going to break my neck to meet a potential love, someone who's been pining away from me for 10 years. So let me just, okay, this is what I told him, just a minute. So he said, just a minute. I got to back up a minute. Okay, so right now I'm in Oklahoma. It'd be fun if we could hook up for a bit. If I fly through at most, I'd have the day, though. By the way, then he asked me to send him a sexy picture. I wrote, I am off Mondays. I go to Minneapolis on Friday for a high school get-together. Cool. Let's give it a shot. Then he asked me to meet him on Valentine's Day, which I already explained I couldn't make it. And then the whole thing just fizzled because I got testy with him.
Okay.
I don't know. It was kind of strange. Like, we knew each other in California. He lived in Ventura County. I lived in L.A. County. I would see him like 6 to 10 times a year as a friend. But then he didn't start expressing that he had a romantic idea about me until he moved to China, which I can interpret that he was lonely. So then I wrote, then he asked me to send him sexy pictures, which I refused. And then I wrote, asking someone if it's worth it then he asked me halfway through the Facebook conversation, well, do you think it would be worth it to come up there? But instead of just saying that, he said, I have to move things around in my schedule. Would it be worth it? And I thought he was implying, am I going to get a booty call? So I wrote, asking someone if it's worth it seems like a stack question. I travel all over the U.S. seeing friends. I went to Virginia on a bus once from Missouri. I took a 48-hour bus ride from L.A. to Atlanta once when Lauren was 3. Seeing friends is worth it, but I don't live in Minneapolis. Since the idea originated on your end, you should ask yourself why you want to see me and at least do enough research to find out exactly where I live. If you just wanted a booty call, that would seem shallow.
You don't need that last thing because you were doing fairly well before that. The very last.
Well, basically, I think I alienated him with my toughness.
Don't worry about that. Good Lord, have mercy. That's the last thing. You've got to determine if this guy is worth it. In a way, the ball is in your court. He said, do you have 2 hours on X, day X? You know, and you have to determine if you have 2 hours on day X, whether it be a booty call or not. Bottom line is that you can always come up with the damn same damn excuses, everything as my period. You know, you're a 55-year-old, 57-year-old woman. It's my period, something like that. You can come up with something. You know,
basically, the thing is, let's just say he's been pining away from me for 2 or 3 years. Don't you think he'd orchestrate a better plan to come and see me? It can't be last minute. It can't be out of the blue. I'm not spontaneous anymore at my age.
Right, and that's what he has to understand. That's what people have to understand with me. I'm not as spontaneous as I was before. But I do have as much freedom as I've ever had. So temporal freedom as I've had. But I haven't had as much freedom to do what I feel like I want to do or need to do as I have now. So you have to
determine. Well, I think, I guess. No, I feel like time and distance would not allow it to make it work. If he's still teaching in China, he's gone 6 to 8 months out of the year. I'm not chasing people at my age. And I'd rather just have a neighbor guy to go drink coffee with. I don't need a whirlwind love affair.
All right. Whatever you say. But booty calls ain't that bad. You like booty calls. But go ahead.
Well, I'm a Christian, and I'm not going to dip out of my moral fiber just for a quickie.
Oh, okay.
So, but anyways, I hope to see you soon. Maybe we'll see each other at the Democratic National Convention. Because I'm I'm signing up to be a delegate.
It'll be really crazy. Another crazy year for us. We have our family reunion in the early part of July, July 4th, and then we have the National NAACP convention in Cincinnati in the middle of July. And it's just going to be nuts again this summer with all kinds of other conventions. So we'll probably meet you at one of those places.
Is one of your family reunions in Wisconsin?
That's going to be in Indianapolis. And that's why I was mentioning it. But it's almost 10:30, so we might want to close up.
Yep. Have a great night, and thanks for participating.
Oh, no problem. Thank you very much. And I'll be everyone can tune in to, Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio. .com/Tabernacle Faith. Peace out.
Okay. And they'll be able to get all the past shows, correct?
You can always listen to our archives. We've had a few callers recently, but not on the night John's called in. But feel free to call in any night. Thank you, and God bless you all. Good night.
God bless you all. Good night.